I know you're tired. I know you're hurting. And I wish I could say something that was classy and inspirational. But that just wouldn't be our style. Pain heals. Chicks dig scars. Glory lasts forever.
Right on. Right on.
Shotgun. DC right. Flip 90. Dig. On the center. On the center. Ready?
Welcome back, joined by powerful Joe Cook. Joe, I should add, the new managing editor at Inside Texas, Joe Cook. Congratulations, Joe.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's been a long time. A lot of hard work, and glad to be a part of Inside Texas and take a major role in it. So it's a lot of fun.
Well, Joe, you're a good dude. You're a great guy. I think you're going to be a star in this business. And I've long held that you're the glue at Inside Texas. And by glue, I mean you're a slow, ponderous, opaque substance.
Yeah, molasses.
Yes.
What speed of molasses? Yeah.
All right, man. All joking aside, congratulations. It's well deserved. It's been a pleasure working with you, and I'm looking forward to more time working with you. As you yell at me as I screw up some aspect of trying to get my posts up. Hey, we got a little football to talk, man. So football season has begun. Talking season is over. And now we get to talk about the football. So, hey, I've got a brilliant construction for this show. Let me bounce it off you, see if you approve. First, we'll talk about the game last week against Louisiana Monroe. And then we'll talk about the coming game against Alabama, which is one of the biggest games that we've had in Austin in quite a while. Sound good?
Yeah, we're entering uncharted territory for football podcasts by doing that.
Yeah, that's right. Where I like to break the mold. I like to push boundaries, Joe. And if you are interested in breaking the mold and going with the very best, I've got a couple of recommendations for you. One, I want you to contact the best realtor in Central Texas. Her name's Laura Baker. She works for the Andy Allen team and Keller Williams. You can reach her at 512-784-0505. Laura is an expert at what she does. She's in the top 5% of realtors in Central Texas. And Joe, when you go buy a house, it's one of the biggest financial decisions you're going to make in your life. And if you just go with your friend's college roommate or that lady who lives down the street who has a real estate license and sells a house every now and then, let me suggest to you that things are not going to go quite as well as you might anticipate, particularly in a market which has gotten increasingly competitive. So whether you're listing or buying, go with the best. Call Laura, 512-784-0505. And once you've called Laura and you've secured that house with her help, you need to put some financing on that house, Joe. This is America. Why pay cash when you can pay some cheap money? And inflation is officially 9-something%. It's actually real inflation's higher than that. So borrow some money cheaper than that and pay back with cheaper dollars. You're going to do that with Gabe Winslow. He's awesome at what he does. He has been a longtime supporter of this podcast and some other podcasts and some other shows on the Inside Texas Network. Gabe's a great dude, super sharp, super ethical, exactly what you want in a mortgage guy. You can reach him at 832-557-1095, or you can go to mortgagesbygabe.com. Hey, Joe, is 832, is that like the accepted Houston area code? Are there rankings and area codes in the Houston area? I know there's got to be multiple. What's the most desirable area code? What's the Houston, like what's the old money memorial area code in Houston?
I think it, so 713 was the first.
Okay.
And then they expanded into 281. And then 832. So, and I think 832 kind of became a thing with cell phones more so than any residence or business or anything like that. And now I think there's another one and it's 346. And I'm like, whoa, okay. I know when you got here or when you got your cell phone. So you're either a new Houstonian or a young person. It's kind of like Austin. I remember there was a recruit at Lake Travis I was talking to. And I'm like, hey, you know, let me get your phone number real quick. And I'm expecting him to say, you know, 512 something, something. And he just drops. Yeah. It's not seven. It's 737. I'm like, whoa, what? Or 575. No, it is 737. I'm going through Google. So it goes like, yeah, it's 737-464. Oh, wait, 737? I'm like, okay, you are young. So
wow.
Yeah, 832 is, it's a lot of cell phones in the Houston area, I'm pretty sure.
It's the inside Texas equivalent of the $1 a 4 months crowd, right?
Sure. Hey, there's still a Houstonian, still an inside Texas subscriber nonetheless.
Hey, not denigrating them. If you can't get to Texas when you're born, you just need to get there back as quickly as possible. I still rock the 512 area code, though I have not been in Austin in 18 years. So I've never caved. I've got to represent the 512 for life. So
I've still got 713, even though I haven't lived in Austin or Houston full time for 10 years. So
nice. All right. Well, Texas represented on the field against ULM. Joe, I tried. I don't know if you sensed this, but whether in my football preview that I write every year or in my preview for Inside Texas or my random comments, I tried to impress upon people that ULM is a bad football team. And there's not a ton to be learned about the quality of Texas, but there might be some things to be learned about the subjective buy-in and sort of organization of this Texas football team versus 2021. So let's just talk broadly. 52-10 win. Texas controlled the game early and often. Scored two non-offensive touchdowns, one on special teams, one on a pick six from Deshaun Jameson on a bad throw that was forced by a Gilbo Finkley overload on Chandler Rogers. Basically, Texas dominated. You know, Bijan Robinson touched the ball twice after the first half. Quinn Ewers didn't really connect in any of the deep game. Texas was still able to control the game and kind of do what they wanted. I would say, and I don't want to get out over my skis on this, but the defense looked coordinated. Is there something that we can take from this game, or is this just, hey, we took care of business, let's move on to the real season?
It did look coordinated. I think a lot of what ULM was going to run wasn't predicated on having a mobile quarterback, but it's like, hey, if it hits the fan, then go ahead and run. And they seemingly tried to limit that, especially in, you know, putting ULM in third and long situations obviously makes that a little bit easier, and you can, you know, take your eyes off him a little bit and just be able to rally to the football. But there was big focus on their slot receiver, Boogie Knight. And I know it's a funny name. He's probably their best player on offense, and he was a non-factor. Chandler Rogers had a, you know, decent game trying to pick up yards on the ground, but he never really picked up first downs on the ground. So I think whatever game plan they wanted to execute, they did really well. In addition, you know, it looked like there was a multiple personnel groupings, but they still seemed to gather around kind of the, I don't know the exact alignment, but three defensive linemen, one edge rusher, and then two off-ball linebackers. And they still work things around with DeMarvian Overshown and utilized his versatility, but it seemed pretty vanilla, even though they used multiple defensive looks. And you know, they got good performances from seemingly everywhere.
Yeah. I was struck by the fact that Jadae Barron and Jalen Gilbo split snaps 50-50 at the star position, the nickel position. Boogie Knight, as you said, four catches for 26 yards. If ULM was going to do anything on offense, he needed to have 100 yards receiving, right? Mm-hmm. On eight catches and move the chains on first down. He was a non-factor. His longest catch, his long was 9, Joe.
Yeah.
Ironic.
He didn't do anything.
Chandler Rogers, I mean, didn't complete a ball down the field. They did get some yardage, and they got some cheap they got a cheap touchdown at the end of the game. You know, their last 10 plays went for 100 yards against basically Texas third teamers. I think something like 75 scholarship players played for Texas. And, you know, one thing that struck me, I don't know about you, Joe, but on defense particularly, Texas was just basically alternating the ones and twos every series, particularly on the defensive line. Certainly saw that at safety some, saw that a little bit at linebacker. Were you surprised by that? Do you think that's something we're going to do going forward? Or you think they're just trying to play a bunch of guys and see who wants to play under the lights?
I think there was two reasons for that. One, what you just mentioned, getting a lot of guys out there. They knew they were going to win this game. I mean, if Vegas sees a 38-point favorite, the coaches do too. But another interesting thing that I think that I don't want to think it forced their hand, but it definitely made them rotate more, was when you have a sudden change touchdown like Texas had, that throws off the time of possession numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the stats, ULM won the time of possession battle pretty easily. But obviously that doesn't correlate to anything. But what that does mean is that the Texas defense was out there probably a little bit longer than they may have anticipated being out there. And so not only were you rotating guys in because of that, you had to rotate in, you know, second string guys, because those first string guys, even though it's ULM, football's a tough game. They got tired probably. And they may have gotten tired a little bit earlier than they anticipated. And I remember seeing some pretty deep rotation in like the late stages of the first and second quarter. Like it was a 10-minute at halftime, it was like almost double. Like it was 20 to 10 ULM. So they had to work in guys to keep legs fresh. And you still saw, you know, they only managed 3 points in that first half. Now, granted, the Texas second teamers are probably a lot better than even ULM's first teamers. It doesn't mean they always execute right, and you know they still made their plays. But I thought that even if it was by design, they had their hand forced in at least how the time of possession went, and those second team defenders did pretty well. Another thing was it was a real pleasant day in Austin. I mean, it was not scorching at all. It rained a ton before. But the humidity and the heat kind of still moved out. So it wasn't just like a scorching hot day where you needed all these backups, but you were still able to get all those guys run in meaningful snaps in game time, probably a little bit of it off schedule, and everybody performed well. So pretty excited. I am kind of curious about something on you. How much are you I know they're imperfect, but how much are you a PFF college guy?
I think it's useful to look at. I'll be honest with you. They're called Pro Football Focus for a reason. Their focus is on pro football. And if you know anything about their grading systems and how and who they hire, I just don't think their best are grading the college game. And I think that their grading system may not translate as cleanly to college, because it's a little bit more nebulous, a little more wide open in sort of responsibilities and who's doing what. And I just, you know, I've seen some grades on games where, let's just say I was unimpressed. You know, in the pro game, I think they do a pretty good job, actually. And I think it's very useful data because one of the things that they do stress is that they grade every play, every game, right? And when you grade every play, you could have a player make a couple of high profile mistakes that get replayed three times and the announcers put, you know, an overlay on it. And you think that guy had a bad game, but then you actually watch the totality of the game and the guy played pretty well. He just, you know, he had a big holding penalty on a 3rd and 10 that in a key moment, but the rest of the game, he played really well. He held up, but the impression of the general fan is that guy sucks. Right. That's a good thing about PFF at the pro level. At the college level, I can't say I've always been impressed. One thing they do try to do grade is the process and not the result of the play, which is something right. that I've always tried to do. So my answer to you is somewhat ambivalent.
So I'm going to give you the top five guys they gave on defense. And okay. I want to see kind of what you think about that. So five was Ishmael Ibrahim, deep backup, probably making his second or so appearance at Texas, because
played,
I think last year
like,
in Rice.
Played like nine injured. Snaps?
Five.
Oh, okay, well, five. That's a robust sample.
But here are the top four, and right. it's hard for me to disagree with these top four. Jalen Gilbo, Moro Ojomo, Keandre Coburn, number one was Baron Sorrell. And I – that says a lot of good things about a defensive line that was not very good last year.
Mm-hmm.
And B, it says a lot what you mentioned, that Jalen Gilbo is already splitting snaps with Jadae Barron. Again, adjust for opponent, but he did really well as a starter at a very tough position.
Yeah, so Sorrell was far and away my player of the game. I mean, unbelievable. Not just the two sacks he had, but he had multiple quarterback pressures. I mean, early in the first quarter, he plants Chandler Rogers on a throw that Rogers actually completes out to the sideline for about 7 yards. But he made Chandler Rogers feel his presence. He was great against the run as well. You know, it's one thing to play an outmatched inferior opponent and sprint up the field every play looking for a sack. Barron Sorrell played the position honestly, and he's an intriguing player because he doesn't have any single outstanding physical attribute. You don't watch Barron Sorrell and go, oh my God, you know, look how strong he is, or look how fast he is, or look how quick he is, or he's 6'6", you know, 275. No, he's just average to above average in every trait. But in totality, because he's so skilled and he plays so hard, he's just really effective. Now, we're going to see how he does against a ramp up in competition level. It's one thing to be effective against ULM, but he's a good player, man, and he gets after it. There was a great play on that same play where he planted Chandler Rogers. They tried to use a tight end to block him on that play as sort of be a speed bump. And he didn't just like run through him. He freaking picked the guy up and slammed him on the way to the quarterback and then slammed Chandler Rogers. So yeah, Barron's, he's a dude that wants to stay on the field, and he ain't coming off. Moro Ojimo, I thought, didn't get quite the credit that he deserved. He had several good pressures on the interior. Keandre did play well. That's a wait and see for me though. One thing that I did like is that he played 25 snaps. And I would not play Keandre Coburn more than 25 or 30 snaps in a football game. Just, you know, if you want him to play his hardest and go full, that's about the range that you want him at. I do need to see him play a little better competition, because one thing that he has shown in the past is that he'll bully and sort of ragdoll really inferior players who are just not big and strong enough to deal with his size. But then when you get a little bit higher quality offensive lineman with some length and a little bit of size, he, you know, does an eighth grade junior high slow dance at the line of scrimmage with them and, you know, loses all that domination. So, yeah. And honestly, I just thought the Texas defensive line was pretty dominant. DeMarvin Overshown was not in that top five that you mentioned. Look, what I will say is Pete Kwiatkowski, to his credit, appears to have found a role for Overshown that really plays to his strengths, which is, let's keep the game real, real simple. And let's give DeMarvion a task. And that task, more often than not, was DeMarvion, get off the ball a little bit, look in and chase. Wherever the ball goes, run, go get him. Or come off the edge and blitz, or you know, sprint this gap. And if you can give DeMarvion a discrete task and not complicate his thinking, he can be a very effective player. Now, down the road, some teams are going to scheme that because they're going to understand that Overshown is not understanding first principles necessarily. He's just been given a discrete task. And there's some things you can do to exploit that. But that's down the road. And Overshown's athleticism, man, it's real. And he's such a long athletic player. He's so quick that he can make his impact felt. I don't think he's ever going to grade out super well, because there's certain plays where his responsibility doesn't jibe with what the offense is doing. And he's just sort of running through a gap, right?
Right.
But it's the best use of him. Because the truth is, as a pure off-ball inside linebacker, it's not that he's a bad player. He's a guy I don't want on the field. And I know that's hard for people to hear because he's on all these all Big 12 teams, but he's a guy who really needs to be in a certain role. And Pete seems to have crafted a few roles for him that fit his personality and what he can do.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. You have behind him, or those other middle linebackers, yeah, Diamante Tucker-Dorsey, who I thought had a pretty pretty good showing. I mean, yeah. It's very obvious that he's not a big guy, but I think we all knew that. He knows where to be. But Jalen Ford had as many tackles as you and I did.
Yeah.
And that's something I'm still confused on. And that's definitely something that I don't know whether it was because he was good or bad or what, but like going forward, you can't have your Mike linebacker put in a goose egg unless he's such a difference maker that they're running away from him. And we know that's probably not Jalen Ford quite yet.
So I will say this, Jalen Ford did not play that great. A lot of it was recognition. In his defense, Texas plays a lot of fronts. And because they're unleashing the defensive line a little bit more, at least against Monroe, we'll see if they do it against Bama. And they have it from different lineups. I mean, we had a lot of different, we had a 4-2-5, a 2-4-5. We ran a three-man front. And Ford's being moved around in there. And each time that happens, he's got different gap responsibilities. And I think it just made him a little slow. I think he's thinking like, okay, oh, damn, we're in a four-man front now. I think, okay, I got to watch the B gap, but I also got to be mindful of the cutback. And as you're thinking that, the ball gets snapped and it just paralyzes you. I think it's going to take a little time and I think he'll figure it out. I really do. I hope he does for the sake of the defense. Hey, I want to switch very quickly to the offense. Quinn Ewers, you put out a post that was fantastic where you just objectively said, here's every Quinn Ewers throw, you know, here's every single one of them in a row. What can we learn from it? His first couple of throws, not great. Mm-hmm. And you saw Sark pulling the reins a little bit on the offense. And then Quinn, played a little better. The guy just hasn't played football in a while. He's a true freshman. Right. There's a lot to shake out. He's on a trajectory of improvement. What struck you from looking at that? Here are all of Ewers' throws.
Those first two were bad. I mean, you can just start there. That was, I'm a quarterback. I'm going to do this. And he kind of forgot that, oh, yeah, there are, even though it's a Sun Belt team and a bad Sun Belt team at that, like there are college athletes on that side. There were also some throws that he was able to sneak in because it's ULM. And yep. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But like you were talking a little bit about process, my big thing was seeing how he handled the mundane. That was the biggest thing I wanted to see. Like, how did he handle, you know, read three, read four? How did he handle stepping up in the pocket a little bit? How did he handle just like, hey, all you need to do is hit the guy on a swing pass, like real quick? He did it right for the most part. I mean, he made some good reads on RPOs. He seemed to finally read, or not finally, he seemed to read the right play for most of the opportunities he had. There were some RPOs he missed. There were some, you know, throws that he missed. But, I mean, he just kind of looked like a regular old freshman and with a lot of talent. So I think it was a good performance. It's definitely got to step up against this opponent. But I think I'd be saying that if he had, you know, a 20 of 21 game or a 10 of 21 game. And obviously he kind of split the difference there. But he definitely made some impressive throws. One thing he's got to do is find his roommate and hit Xavier Worthy. And that storyline hopefully begins on Saturday with the Crimson Tide.
Yeah, I agree with you. I thought a couple of contrasts on Quinn Ewers early. He throws a little swing pass to Keelan Robinson, throws it behind him, and Texas
the lateral.
And Texas wide receivers, by the way, blocked really well all Saturday. Not just Whittington, but also Casey Kane. They did Omire did actually a really nice job when he got put in. They had the blocking set up. Keelan Robinson gained like 7 yards just off athleticism. And then the identical play, they run a little bit later near the goal line with Bijan, and Ewers throws it perfect. Like velocity leads Bijan perfectly on the little flare out of the backfield, and Bijan catches the ball squared up and ready to go, and of course scores easily. And so that was a contrast in what just good execution can make the difference on in a play for Quinn. And then I thought in the third quarter, he started feeling it, right? He made that beautiful throw when he stepped up in the pocket to Jatavian. he had that little flip to Jatavion where he sensed him, faked it downfield, and flipped it out to him for a gain. And then he got pulled. He got taken out. I would have liked to have seen him have one more series. And I understand Sark had seen enough, but I thought Quinn was kind of feeling it a little bit, and it would have been nice to see him almost like run tempo. Like, even if you're going to be accused of being a jerk, I don't care. You know, the purpose of your job, ULM, is to come in, collect your check, and let us work on some stuff. I would have kind of liked to have seen Ewers go tempo and lead a passing drive down the field and score and then go off. But, you know, whatever. Jatavion Sanders, very quickly, man, he's as promised, or at least as I promised in my preview. I think he's a really good player, and I think he's only going to get better. That guy had not caught a college pass yet, and he's got good awareness. He's an above average blocker, I'd say, or average. And he's a good receiver. And we haven't had that trait combination at tight end in Texas since it's been a while.
Right. And
I think he's going to make a difference for Quinn Ewers.
I think so too, because a lot of times tight ends are, third option, the safety guy. If Jatavion Sanders is your safety guy, that's better than a lot of other teams' defenders that they put at that spot. And it allows Sark to utilize 12 personnel pretty well. And that's something he really enjoys doing. And 11 personnel. Like, he does add a lot. That's why Sark talks so much about the tight end position. I'm with you on Ewers. I think it would have been nice to see him get one more, but a lot of coaches operate from the perspective of, I'm going to get my guy one more chance so he knows what it's like to do halftime adjustments and then come out and play. And then, not risk any more than that. Obviously, they wanted to cycle through, they wanted to get Hudson Card some playing time. And even though I think Malik Murphy, and if shit truly hit the fan and something happened to Quinn and Card, I think Malik Murphy would go in. They wanted to get Charles Wright some snaps, and you could just see a gigantic smile on his face, which was pretty cool. Yeah, Sanders played well. I thought Helm did pretty well. I was just really impressed with – there was just, again, competence everywhere. It didn't seem like there were a ton of like bad, I can't really even remember any drops off the top of my head. Maybe some pass breakups, but no, like, oh man, he dropped it. And then one thing everybody wanted to see was how Calvin Banks acquitted himself, and he kicked ass. Like, he was phenomenal. And Christian Jones. I know this wasn't a good defensive unit they were going up against, but both of Texas tackles gave themselves some confidence heading into a game where they're going to need a lot of confidence.
Yeah, so I agree on Banks. His feet are special for his size, and you could tell he takes football seriously. Like, he's trying to apply the techniques he's learning. He's aggressive. I mean, this guy, you get a couple of years of development and 20 starts under his belt, and this dude looks like an NFL player. So Christian Jones, he run blocked effectively. In fact, really well on a couple of plays. He was devastating on RPOs. He's great at blocking down on people. Pass blocking still showed some issues, man. He's overcompensating for the inside moves that he gives up. And he allowed some ULM guys around the corner on him a couple of times. And when you're 6'6", 320, you should be carrying that guy. If he wants to go sprinting his ass around the corner, you should say, no problem, let me help you around the corner.
Right.
And you drive his ass 10 yards past the quarterback. And Christian is not doing that. He's still stopping his feet and kind of pushing the guy. Like, I've done my job. I'm done blocking. He needs to get a lot stickier. He needs a little Joe Cook glue is what I'm saying. But yeah, we need everything we can against Bama. And that's a good segue to previewing Bama. We did our 30 minutes on ULM. We did the appetizer. Let's talk the main course. Crimson Tide are coming to town. Look, Nick Saban's the GOAT. He's the best college football coach of all time. Alabama has created a juggernaut, a dynasty, the likes of which it's hard to find a comp in college football history. The team is loaded. They've got a Heisman-winning quarterback. They've got incredible defensive personnel, particularly on the edges. You know, Will Anderson gets lots of attention, as he should. He's a top three NFL draft pick. Here's a little news flash for y'all. Dallas Turner, although not as refined a football player, is a better athlete than Will Anderson. And he had 11, I think he had 8 or 9 sacks last year over his last 7 games. So when the light turned on for Dallas Turner, he was every bit the equal of Will Anderson just as a pure pass rusher. Will Anderson is not just a great pass rusher. He also has a great knack for cutting, you know, diving through holes and getting tackles for loss. He had 34 last year, Joe, which is shocking. And Alabama secondary, it's all juniors and seniors. They've got like 100 combined starts between them. They've got a good inside linebacker. Their front is experienced, not as talented as Alabama fronts that we're used to on the D-line. Interestingly, same can be said on their O-line. For Alabama standards, not quite as good as they're used to. I'd say their wide receivers, every bit as fast as any wide receiver core Alabama's ever had. Not as skilled. They don't have Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle or Henry Ruggs even. Well, Ruggs is more of a speed guy, but they don't have that skill level of like an Amari Cooper, right? Mm-hmm. Those guys are freak speed demons. And then they got a transfer from Georgia Tech, Jahmyr Gibbs, who's going to be quietly one of the secret keys to their season because he is incredibly talented. And he's not the typical mold of Alabama running back. He's a quick, like juke you, get a 90-yard run kind of dude, not a 245-pound power monster. It's a good football team, and they're number one for a reason. So should Texas just forfeit, or should they go up and show up Saturday morning and go play the game?
I don't know. I'd like a free Saturday morning, maybe. Watch some of the other game. But that's
come on. Where's your competitiveness, Joe?
No, there aren't very many other good games on this weekend anyway, either. So that's why you got all the pregame shows in Austin. I don't want to say it's a throwback to teams of Alabama past, like older Saban teams, like early 2000s teams, especially because they have someone like Bryce Young at quarterback, but they just seem to be super, super high floor, but not like a tremendously high ceiling on top of that. It's kind of odd because it's just extreme competence everywhere. If it wasn't for Bryce Young, they'd probably be running with Gibbs and Jamarian Miller and Trey Sanders and Jace McClellan a lot. And they may still do that. But it just doesn't seem, I mean, they're the number one team without a doubt, but it doesn't seem like it's this transcendent, you know, otherworldly team that's just going to, you know, put 60 on everybody. They'll probably win like 49-17 a lot, but not, you know, 60-0 a lot. And granted, that's kind of splitting hairs. Who wouldn't love to be able to do that? But like, it just seems like it's an experienced, super, super high floor team that Bryce Young helps elevate even further, but it's not going to be, I don't know. Like, I just don't feel like it has a dominant position group. I just feel like every position group is really, really good. Maybe the edges are the dominant position group, but it feels like every position group is like a, you know, 90 out of 100, which is an incredible baseline for a team, instead of having like a bunch of 98s, 99s, and then like 280s, but still you get that same average. I think that's the point I'm trying to make, because I know Nick Saban thought last year was a rebuilding year for this upcoming season. And that's it's interesting to hear him or hear that storyline be kind of put out, just because I guess he just loves the fact that there's just baseline, such high baseline competence everywhere that makes it so there just aren't very many holes on this team.
Yeah, you know, the holes such as they are, I don't know that Texas necessarily here's the thing that's troubling for me as like an analyst. Alabama's a better team than Texas. Alabama's a more experienced team than Texas, particularly at a lot of key positions, quarterback, defensive back, secondary, broadly speaking, even the offensive line. Texas also doesn't have great matchups with Alabama. So, you know, I'm of the school of styles make fights, and there are superior football teams who can play an inferior team, but the inferior team's strengths align well to that stronger team's weaknesses. And so you're going to get a really competitive game, right? I feel like Texas doesn't even match up particularly well. Like the things that Texas can do really well, I think that Alabama can cover, can deal with. And so that'll be an interesting match of whether that perception is true. Because I think going in, you would say, hey, Texas would be wise on offense because of that pass rush to run the ball and also get the ball to Bijan Robinson and JT Sanders very quickly and look for matchup exploitation. Well, Bama is well aware of this. So there's often they're not going to be assigning a linebacker to Bijan Robinson out of the backfield. They'll assign a defensive back, right? They'll assign a guy who can run with him. And Texas has to be able to punish that by running the ball and by doing some things. And I don't know if Texas can do that. I know Sark has some stuff up his sleeve. I know we're going to see some chicanery. The question is whether Texas can execute it, but also how quickly does that bucket go dry, right? And we just run out of good ideas and Alabama adjusts. So is Texas going to kind of, you know, come out and do a bunch of promising things early? Then Alabama goes, okay, we know what you're doing. And then they adjust and then Texas just stops scoring. And then the inevitable happens, right? I don't know. How do you see the matchup? Do you think that's a fair assessment?
Well, I mean, let's kind of think of how Steve Sarkisian operates. Is he going to try to run up the middle? Well, you've got young Hayden Connor, your second option at center in Jake Majors, at least from this camp, and then true freshman Cole Hudson. You want to run up the middle on Alabama with that? All right, you want to run outside? You want to run against Dallas Turner and Will Anderson and Henry To'o and any of the other linebackers with guys like, you know, Christian Jones and true freshman Kelvin Banks? Do you want to test your, you know, mettle with Xavier Worthy against guys like Eli Ricks and those guys? Or do you want to try and make Jordan Battle go head-to-head against Jatavion Sanders? Like, yeah, I don't see a big place to where there's like a – that's the key. That's where you got to go. I kind of wonder if Sark's just going to try a little bit of everything, see what's working early, and then just – oh, there it is, and then harp on that because – you know, he wants to, and it's going to probably take a lot of Bijan Robinson, no matter what that thing he's going to harp on is, whether it's passing it to him out of the backfield, whether it's running up the middle, whether it's, you know, getting a little creative with how they get him the ball. It's going to revolve around him, but I just don't know what the right place to use him is, considering all the different places where you probably – have a disadvantage. And Sark knows that, but he also says, hey, I can't start throwing my splitter that I learned 2 weeks ago. It's like, I got to try my fastball and just hope I can get it by him. And that's the best you can ask for. And if you go down swinging that way, well, at least you went, if Bijan Robinson runs 30 times for 90 yards, hey, and you know, they tried that. That's the way Texas knows that they can win games going forward. It may not work this week, but you know, it's better than having true freshman Quinn Ewers throw 50 times, unless, you know, they're down 20 points and they want to get it going. But, like, they're going to try to ride Bijan Robinson. I just don't know what the right direction of taking him is.
Yeah, that's a great point. So two thoughts. One, don't make baseball analogies. I'm the baseball expert here. We've established that. There's a hierarchy of baseball writers at Inside Texas. I'm at the top. You know what a totem pole is, right, Joe?
Forgot about that, baseball.
That's right. All right. I'm at the top of the totem pole. All right. And then secondly, good points. Here's what Sark is going to attack. So look, broadly speaking, when you're on offense, even on defense too, if you're a coordinator, you can attack the scheme of the opponent or you can attack their personnel. And you should be looking at both, right, when you're scouting an opponent. And this is one of the things that drove me nuts about Tom Herman. The other team would have an injury out at corner. And I know that team. It's a Big 12 team. I know their roster. I know they don't have a backup corner. And the backup corner trots out there and he can barely like wear his pads correctly. He's 5'9", 170 pounds, and a true freshman. And we don't attack him because we're attacking scheme, right? We're running our stuff.
Running our stuff.
That drives me insane. Problem. Conversely, there is a scheme. Alabama runs a scheme. Pete Golding runs a scheme. Nick Saban runs a scheme. Steven Sarkisian knows their scheme, okay? He knows the points in the Bama defense that he can attack. If I do this, if I show this look, I know there's going to be an open space 8 yards over here, okay? I think that's what Texas is going to do or try to do. I think Steve Sarkisian is going to attack the Alabama scheme. Now, you could get into the Princess Bride situation here with the poison cup. Nick Saban and Pete Golding know Steve Sarkisian knows their scheme. So I know that you know that I know, but also I know that you know that I know we know, you know. So you get into this nonsense, and at some point, Joe, you may just have to throw your fastball, right? But I do think, broadly speaking, Sark's going to try to attack Alabama's scheme, not necessarily their personnel. And that's going to be an interesting, interesting thing to watch, because what you're going to see are a bunch of set piece sort of plays on offense where there's a lot going on and there's going to be a motion guy and there's going to be a reverse jet sweep behind the quarterback. And it's all trying to attack a certain guy's keys so he can hit Jatavion Sanders down the middle for 12 yards. And the question is, how much of that does Sark have? Like, how much ammunition does he have of that variety before the powder runs dry?
Yeah. And then eventually the powder is going to run dry and you just have to hope that you can, your guys can beat their guys. But I don't know if that's going to be a strategy that works out. So, but yeah, I mean, that's something I asked Sark about the other day. It's like, you went against Pete Golding literally every day. So I go, oh yeah, old Petey. So that tells you how close and friendly they are. I mean, Pete Golding, it's not necessarily running Nick Saban's system, although there is a lot of pattern matching and principles that Saban brought around, that Pete Golding runs. But yeah, I mean, he's got to rely on, even though there is that, I know what you know that I know, you gotta attack what you know. Like, if you know that Pete Golding and his linebackers have to play a certain coverage, a certain way against a certain look, who cares if Pete Golding knows that? You got to go after it, and you have to go after it and, you know, attack it with your best players. So the big thing is, I feel like, and something we may have glossed over when thinking about ULM is, I mean, Xavier Worthy can't have a 2-catch game. Like,
no,
he can't, because if that's the case, then you're not, your frame of your work area is a 30 by 30 box, and you're not going to beat Bama that way. You have to extend the field in some way, by, you know, hitting deep shots, stuff like that. But all in all, that's to say Xavier Worthy can't have a 2-catch 24 yard game like he had.
That's a great point. You got to make the field big. You have to make the field as big as possible, and you got to get the ball in Worthy's hands. One thing I will say people need to look for, and, you know, we're going to try this and we'll see how it goes. The question is, you know, how do you block Dallas Turner? How do you block Will Anderson? We're not going to block them very effectively. One of the things you can do is run the ball at them. One of the things you can do is give them a lot to think about. You can have different guys blocking them from different directions. We may see a number 92 out there a little bit. Andre Kerrich, when he's taking off his jersey and putting on the tight end eligible jersey, that's not to help pass block necessarily. It's to run block and thus make Will Anderson stay at home and honor his responsibilities as a run defender and create that second of hesitation on his pass rush so that you might be able to hit a play action shot before yours gets earholed.
You mean Andre Kerrich isn't your first receiving option?
No, but you know what? If Sark doesn't have a little goal line play dialed up for him, I'm going to be disappointed. But yeah, I think the answer is, if you want to protect your quarterback against Bama, the protection starts with your quarterback. Meaning, yours has got to understand he's got a 2.5 second clock in his head. And if the ball ain't out, he needs to get it out. He needs to find a dude in a Texas jersey near the sideline and sail it over his head.
Because he's got hit number five. Like it's always going to be, I think we could be overcomplicating it in that Bijan Robinson's going to do whatever you need him to do in this game. Now it may not be most successful, but if there's trouble, throw it to five. And I know they're going to cover him. Well, great. If they're going to cover him, that means more things are open downfield and you can consider that. But throw it to five. Like sometimes just don't overthink it. Get the ball out and get it to your best player if that 2.5 seconds expires pretty quickly.
Hey, Joe, that's a great point. You know, because you can get into the chess matchups and, well, if we do this, they'll have to do this. Hey, man, give it to five because your best hope is that he jukes an Alabama defender into the dirt, stiff arms another dude and runs down the sideline for 60 yards. That's what you're looking to have happen. And if it doesn't happen and you get a 2 yard gain, great. Line up and try to do it again. And you just got to get the ball into Xavier Worthy's hands, Bijan Robinson's hands, Jatavion Sanders' hands. And then once they start to overcompensate, you know, that's when maybe you can get a Jordan Whittington, you know, streaking across the field and hitting him on the move. Texas has some weapons. I mean, I'd feel a lot better about this game with Isaiah Nayor, to be honest.
Oh, yeah.
But Texas has weapons. I mean, like, let's not downplay that there's some dudes out there who can play football, and they've got futures in a league higher than the Big 12 when their eligibility runs out. So, you know, let's not poor mouth Texas too much. Now, on defense, and I know you got to hustle, Joe, so we'll do this fairly quickly. On defense, we still don't know if this defense, to the degree to which they're better than last year. I suspect from what I saw, they're a little more organized and a little better coached up than they were last year. And at least they just looked coordinated, for lack of a better term.
Yeah,
that was refreshing.
It was all Gary Patterson. He did it all. It was all
Gary did it all.
The special assistant to the head coach, and Texas would have given up 60 points, and we would have been, you know, looking for – it was all Gary Patterson, everything he did over the offseason. No other coach did anything. It was only Gary Patterson.
That's right. All good things come from Gary Patterson, except TCU's last season in which they all quit on their head coach. I will say that Bryce Young represents a level of challenge that Texas has not seen. Really interesting quarterback. I mean, if you guys just watch him, you know, taking a step back, he's barely 6 feet tall, all of 190, 195 pounds, but he's got an arm. And he doesn't really necessarily, people think when you say he's got an arm that, oh, he's throwing bombs right and left. Not really. Where he's just got this zippiness on his arm and his throws that shows up on really accurate short and intermediate throws that give the receiver the ability to do something with that ball once it's there. And you'll see him do things like when he knows the coverage is coming from safety from the right, he'll hit that receiver purposely on the left shoulder to say, as you catch the ball, cut up left because right. The tackler is coming from the right. That's NFL quarterback stuff. And most quarterbacks don't do that at the college level. I'm very curious to see how he does. And I'm frankly curious to see how the Alabama running game does. They obviously have more of a big play threat with Jahmyr Gibbs. Their offensive line probably improved from last year. We need to see that. I really want to see how our defensive line matches up with their offensive line. Because if there is an area where Texas can be at parity or maybe even have an advantage, maybe it's there. So we're going to find out.
Yeah, I'm trying to think a little bit about Bryce Young. And it's not easy to make, but you kind of think of Kyler a little bit. He doesn't have the foot speed of Kyler, but he's got the release. I mean, he's got this kind of similar size, and he's got the acumen. I don't know. Bryce Young may have a little bit weaker arm than Kyler, but that whenever I watched Kyler in that 2018 season, I'm like, I have no clue where the ball's going.
Yeah.
Whether he's delivering it, whether he's taking it, or whatever's happening. And after last week, seeing Bryce Young run for as much as he did, he kind of has that. Now, I know Bill O'Brien, I mean, he had Deshaun Watson, and so he knows that, hey, the quarterback run game is important. But that didn't seem like something Saban was totally big on. Remember, because he went with Tua over Jalen Hurts, and Jalen could run, but Tua could pass. So I think they know that Bryce Young's bread and butter is passing the ball, is over running the ball, especially when you're Kyler Murray's size and you're also about to play an SEC schedule. But that's kind of the guy I see, someone who can deliver everything, always make the right reads, is athletic enough to be a problem on the ground, but that's not where they're always going to stress you. I think Moro Ojimo has to have another big game. I think that even Alabama, they were missing one of their typical starters. I think one of their starting guards didn't play against Utah State. Emil Ekelior, I forget how you pronounce it. I don't think he played. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if a less experienced, though still talented guy, has to go up against that experienced Texas interior on the defensive line. And, you know, I think if Moro Ojomo and Tavondre Sweat and Keandre Coburn split the snaps and do what they need in this game, it'll help. But it's all about keeping him in the pocket and making him, you know, forcing him to have to be that really good quarterback instead of letting him be a really great athlete. And I think the same goes for the Alabama defense against Texas, too.
Yeah, you know, one thing I'll say about Bryce Young that I did see last year when he did struggle, he's not a big guy. And he can get swallowed up if you do a good job of containing him on the edges and you can get a little push up front. And you get your guys with their hands up, he can get swallowed up by that pocket, right? He can get swallowed up and just not see windows because he's 6 feet tall. You know, he is not Josh Allen in there who can stand there strong as a statue and just like as a guy brushes by and gets his hand on him, he just shrugs it off and throws the ball, right? That's not Bryce Young. He can't do that. He needs to escape and find a window. And if you can forbid that, if you can get Oviagofu and Baron Sorrell and some of those guys or DeMarvian Overshown doing a good job on containment, you can swallow him up and you can make him, you know, make an error. You know, good point on Bryce Young. I don't know. I mean, we're kind of coming up to the close here. Do you have any parting thoughts on this game? Anything to share? Any special keys that we need to look out for?
I know Stark said that Bama's a pass-first offense now, but when you got Jahmyr Gibbs, Chase McClellan, Trey Sanders, all those guys, Jamarian Miller, like we talk about Texas having a great running back room, that's a great running back room too. And if you can cycle all those guys to where, you know, you're not even really having to test inexperienced defensive backs or not inexperienced, but defensive backs that have a lot to prove, though still athletic. I think that Bama may just try to run this ball over Texas. And granted, they'll take their deep shots, but I think they're going to look at that defensive line and think, we can push Keandre Coburn back 2 yards. We can push Vernon Broughton back a lot.
Well,
we can push we can make Casey Kane prove himself, or not Casey Kane, Baron Sorrell and Oviagofu prove themselves. And so I think that I know we're focusing a lot on Bryce Young, Heisman Trophy winner, coming back to DKR, but I think this is going to be a game where Saban's like, let's just trench them and they'll probably succeed a lot that way. Maybe I don't think it's gonna be like 200 yards running, but like it'll be a lot. I think that they're gonna try and really go at it on the ground.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I think a lot of it depends on how we deploy our defense. One point I would maybe make is people point to the A&M upset of Bama last year. One thing, remember, A&M had a near elite defense, or at least a minimum, a very, very good defense. And then two, Alabama dropped a lot of footballs.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that if you do think Alabama's receiving core is extremely fast, which they are, but they may not be as skilled as some of the guys they've had in the past. You know, Mechie, Devontae Smith, those guys. Don't be shy about letting them catch the ball in front of you and making the play and making Alabama progress down the field. I don't see us playing a defense where you give up 70-yard touchdowns. I don't see that being a successful formula for Texas, where you're trying to get sacks on Bryce Young and, you know, you're going in single coverage across the board and allowing Alabama to run verticals all day. I would see if those guys can catch the ball. I want to see if those guys can execute. I want to see if those guys hear footsteps. You know, some of these guys are transfers, Jermaine Burton from Georgia, the guy from Louisville. These guys can fly, but they may not be quite as skilled as what Alabama's used to in terms of running sophisticated routes and catching the ball for 18 and getting up and doing it again. Let's make them show that they can do that. And then also, to your point, try to play an honest box as much as possible and see if you can hold down Alabama's run game doing that. Because if Texas can, boy, Texas defense has a shot. Having a shot doesn't mean that we hold Bama to 17 points. It means you hold Bama in the low 30s. And that's the recipe where Texas can pull off a major upset. One last thing, and I'm curious to see if you agree. A lot of people are saying this is a measuring stick for Texas. This is, we're going to find out where the program is. I disagree strongly. I think the measuring stick for Texas happens against UTSA, West Virginia, Oklahoma, and Texas Tech. The four opponents after Alabama. Those four games will tell me more about Texas and where they are as a program than, in my opinion, what happens this Saturday.
It's definitely a measuring stick, but it's not the one that people need to focus on more. Like, you're going to see that, yes, Texas is probably behind the number one team of the past decade. That doesn't mean it's not a measuring stick, but it's not the more important measuring stick. And you even heard that from some of the players this week who talked about our goal is to make it to Arlington on December, whatever. Like, it is a measuring stick, but it's not the measuring stick to make sure that you, or to, you know, render your grand estimations about the program about, because Alabama's going to play a lot of teams who are literally chasing Alabama every single year in, you know, the coming weeks that are going to use that measuring stick and also fall short. It doesn't matter as much for Texas, at least right now, as it does for those other teams. The ones that matter for Texas, like you mentioned, are coming. But I mean, there are definitely going to be takeaways to see, you know, where elite programs have steps on decent programs. But it's not going to be it's not like Auburn going into the weekend of Thanksgiving thinking, all right, this is how we define ourselves. It's not going to be like that for when Texas plays Alabama.
I agree. Well, and if you're looking for a measuring stick in your personal finance, you need to go to the best, someone who understands how to measure and how to calculate that. That's David McClellan. He's been with us from almost the very beginning of this podcast. He's a phenomenal guy. He is a certified financial planner. You can reach him at 312-933-8823. Right now, David is being featured in Kiplinger Magazine. He's got a 7-part series on retirement tax bombs. He is an absolute expert in this area. And I'll be linking to that series in the show notes. In the meanwhile, although David is located in Austin, Texas, he has clients across the United States. Reach out to him. 312-933-8823. He's offering a free consultation. And now more than ever, you need to make sure that your financial ducks are in a row. David McClellan can get you to your financial freedom goals. Reach out to him, give him a call. Great guy, extremely, extremely bright. I always learn something every time I talk to him. And Joe, I could say the same thing about you. Thank you so much for coming on, sharing your wisdom. I know you've got to go get some stuff done, and you're talking to what? David Pierce here in a little bit, huh?
Yeah, he's calling me, not baseball.
I find that shocking, but I also view that as when you show up for an appointment, you talk to the secretary first before you talk to the executive. You know what I'm saying?
Fair.
All point. Right, that is fair. Point. All right, for Joe Cook, I'm Paul Wadlington. Hook 'em. Let's see if Texas can pull off an awesome upset this Saturday. That'd be pretty sweet. Y'all take care.